You're listening to All the Best on FBI Radio 94.5. I'm Maddie McQueen. I hope you're hungry, because this week we're bringing you a six-course meal. Let's start with a glass of wine.
Now the first thing is the fruit, like, jump in your face, which I really like. You remember, when we were, it was fermenting, like, you've still got this fresh raspberry and fruit.
Chardonnay, but very, like, earthy, very, like, full flavours, quite meaty.
Then you got, like, the length of the wine, which come with the acidity, the tannins. It's pretty soft, it's pretty, like, all gentle, it's pretty sexy.
Juicy, like, dark cherries, forest floor, like...
Yeah, it smells like raspberry yogurt.
Confectionery. fairy floss.
Oh, it tastes like strawberries and cream.
Candy cane.
Bit of vanilla.
Mm.
Like red frogs.
It's too sweet.
Super duper. Like, I always think of, like, you know, walking through like a dark forest, you know, and that's that. And I always get it with the Pinot down here.
Yeah, because you feel more the link. You feel really the link to the earth with this one, actually. When we've been picking it, you know, like the grapes were literally.
So does that mean it actually smells like the ground from here? Literally smells.
Yeah, a little bit smoky.
Yeah,
maybe it's sort of.
There's always smoke.
Smokiness to it, a bit saline as well. Go in the vineyard and then you grab a bit of earth and then you smell it. You smell a little bit like this, but dry, like really dry.
That is so good.
The wine that makes
you
sweat.
Right.
Because you want to drink more already.
Yeah. Dry, I need some liquid.
Like every vineyard or any, you know, is all unique everywhere around the world. It's all, they all have their own terroir, but... but yeah, this is just one that we're, you know, we're working with. Now we're in the hay shed where we've been fermenting barrels this year. So these are wines that were made just over the last month and a half. And it's sort of like a newborn child, you know, like it'll grow and it'll change in the next, you know, and develop into something within the next, you know, few months. Sometimes we leave them for longer, sometimes we, you know, we take them out.
And how do you know when they're ready?
Taste, yeah.
I just love that coming. Remember?
He has the intoxication. The last one.
Sink it.
Sink it. Maybe a bit of Semillon.
That story was by Eugenia Zubchenko. Avocado on toast has been a symbol of a debate about housing affordability. Our next story has nothing to do with that.
It's 1997. Against all odds, you survived your mother accidentally taking an indigestion medication that should have left you at best deaf and at worst dead. And now you're finally reaping the rewards of your stronger than average immune system. Suddenly, all around you is bright, and you're being cradled into the smoothest sheets you'll touch for the next 7 years. He's got a big mouth, this one, a nurse says, and she laughs. Your mother cries, you cry. It's 2009. You read a novel by Ben Sherwood called The Man Who Ate the 747. It's about a man who ate a 747 and won a Guinness World Record for it. There was also some love subplot involved somewhere, but you don't care about that as much, because no one cares about love or subplots when they're 12. When you watch the Guinness World Records TV show, you see a man gyrating with no less than 109 hula hoops around his body. Then you see a dog with a glass of water on its head walk 20 steps back and forth. Then you see a woman eat 19 avocados in 1 minute. So you think, if a man can eat in an entire plane, then you can eat 20 avocados in 60 seconds. So you train. The first week, you eat an avocado at breakfast, and one at lunch, and one at dinner. Sometimes two, if you're feeling peckish. The next week, you double that amount. Soon enough, you're guzzling overripe avocados with all the fervor of the man who ate the 747, except you have no love subplots weighing you down. Everyone always said you had a big mouth, your mum says. You want to ask who? But your mouth is too full of avocado to respond. Suddenly, all around you is bright. You're being hustled on stage by Grant Denyer. A minute later, you're surrounded by 20 avocado seeds. The crowd goes wild. How do you feel? Grant Denyer asks. Your mother cries. You laugh, through teeth stained green. It's 2017. The restaurant has those red and white check tablecloths you see in old Italian movies, and unlit candles in cups of plastic. You stare at the doorway for too long, in case you miss the person whose face you've only seen once, pixelated, on your screen. You still swipe right, though. When they finally arrive, you're relieved to find that they actually resemble their photo. It only takes 4 minutes this time before they say, "Hey, aren't you the guy who ate 20 avocados once?" You sigh. At least they're being direct. Sometimes people skirt around it for an entire date, let you pick up the bill, and then ask. That night, you sit on a dark couch in a dark apartment, illuminated by the glow of your aimless swiping. As you wait for midnight to tick over, you call your mum. You haven't spoken to her in 2 weeks. The line purrs for a while, long enough that you think she's asleep. She finally answers. In the background, you think you can hear sheets rustling, the echo of a man's voice. "Is everything okay?" she asks. The sound of lips smacking against skin. More rustling. "Yeah," you answer, and trail off with a hurried promise to talk later. In the distance, your mother laughs. You cry.
That was Michael Sun, with sound design by Mia Hull. The supervising producer was Alison Chan. This story was first published by Subbed In. When I think about comfort food, my mind immediately goes to cheese.
64 slices of cheese.
Joy and Sheila share their comfort food.
Crispy green mangoes dipped in bagoong for merienda. Fried spam, runny fried eggs, and garlic fried rice for breakfast. Champurrado and condensed milk after Simbanga Bear. Being 6 months pregnant and sneaking downstairs at 2 a.m. to eat chicharron and vinegar. That kilogram bag of dried black watermelon seeds that Ma and Da brought back from the Philippines, and the hours we spent in front of the TV sucking the salt off each one before cracking them open with our teeth just to eat the inside. Leftover chicken adobo for Saturday lunch. Curing a cold with a steaming hot bowl of arroscaldo. Shaving ice for halo halo. Trying to eat pulveron without it falling apart in our hands. These are memories from a lifetime of Filipino comfort food.
Bangkan yohel, thick noodles made from rice and tapioca in a hot broth with meaty pork bones full of marrow. Bunbao, a big bun full of minced pork, a quail egg, black fungus and a slice of lapsung. Bumbohoy, spicy beef noodle soup served with sliced white onion and a spoonful of fried chili. Tatkar, caramelized pork belly served with steamed jasmine rice and slices of crispy cucumber. Wonton in a savory broth served with finely chopped coriander and green onion. Bangkep layu, pandan and coconut waffles, hot and fresh and fragrant. This is my Vietnamese comfort food.
Those stories were by Joya Dahn and Sheila Pham. All the Best exists because we want emerging Australian storytellers to learn how to make audio stories. You can start by pitching to us from any part of Australia, and we'll pair you with one of our supervising producers. Email contact@allthebestradio.com. Let's get back to food. We have a special dinner guest beaming in from Scotland.
Dear All the Best, hello from Scotland. I've been in the UK for about 4 months now. I've been studying hard, meeting family, seeing the sights, and eating lots and lots of food. I was born in Glasgow, and I migrated to Australia when I was 4. As the winter months are ending here, the food is beginning to cool down. Although Melbourne winters can get cold, there isn't much need for hot, hearty stews every night of the week. I miss the variety of fresh produce in Australia. Tinned peas pale in comparison to our year-round leafy salads. I'll admit, it has been a challenge feeding myself in a place I connect with childhood treats. When I was a kid living in Melbourne, there was nothing better than waking up to the smell of a Scottish fry-up full breakfast. On special occasions, Mum and Dad would treat me to a morning meal with lawn sausage, affectionately known as square sausage, and made of mincemeat, wheat and spices, plus potato tatty scones on the side with a splash of tangy brown sauce. At dinner time, I have an iron brew. What's iron brew? If you don't count whiskey, it's Scotland's national beverage of choice, an orange soft drink that I can only describe as tasting a bit like barley sugars. Iron brew is literally everywhere. Children walk to school with large bottles in hand, and a vodka iron brew is a common pairing in the club. I remember when I was 10 and we came back to Scotland for a 2-week family visit. One night, I drank so much iron brew I made myself sick. It was probably the pairing of fizzy juice and too many packets of Quavers crisps. Quavers were my favourite crisps. With their light, fake cheese flavour and curly shape, I could eat them by the bucket load. You can get them, among other Scottish treats like single iron brew cans, at some Australian candy shops at a rather inflated price. When it was time to come home to Oz, we smuggled a family pack in our suitcase. Getting past quarantine was exhilarating. I had a friend once tell me she felt her healthiest when she was eating cuisine from her country of heritage, that being Italian. I couldn't say the same about my indulgence in sugary sweets and chips with curry sauce. But all this isn't to say that it isn't possible to eat like crap in Australia. When we first moved to Melbourne, we regularly had pre-packaged frozen food. When I watched my grandparents pull dinner from the freezer here in Glasgow, I start to connect the dots about my early childhood food consumption. I am looking forward to a salad when I get home, but until then, I'll be enjoying the best potatoes in the world. At least, in my mind, they're the best. Remember, your body is a temple. Just kidding. Drink water and love yourselves. Lots of love, Erin.
That story was by Erin Dick, the All the Best SYN Community Coordinator. When Antonia moved from Venezuela to Australia, his mum gave him a book, and the book had a secret.
So my mum gave me this recipe book with a bunch of side notes and funny stories and kind of all the family favorites and really traditional dishes that we used to make back home. Every time I cook something, just remember my family and remember the days we spend in the kitchen. So for me, that recipe book is a part of home. One of the family favorites is our special torta de pisitos, which roughly translates to layer cake or kind of little layer cake, which is basically the tradition was the day you turn 12, you would get 12 layers of this amazing cake. and that would go on till you turn 18. And then for the rest of your life, you still would get, you know, 18 layers. It's basically a vanilla cake, but it's done in very specific cake tins. Like, they kind of have like a self-scraping kind of thing. So it's, I don't know, probably 2-3 mils cake. And then in between you have a chocolate cream, and then that's... So it needs to be set and rest for 2 days in the fridge, and then that's covered with bitter chocolate. So it's pretty dense, but it's really yum.
Back home, who normally makes this cake for the birthday person?
Traditionally, the person who makes the cake are the women in the family. So either my mom or my grandma. I think they broke a little bit the tradition with me because it was meant to be for my wife. The recipe is passed between women. So my grandma gave that to my mom. My mom was meant to have it for my sister or the woman I marry. So as I moved here, so she kind of felt the need to like pass on the tradition and just give it to me. And then, you know, so it stays. I'm still trying to figure out the recipe. So my mom and my grandma, they're good at it. Like, they've been doing it for, I don't know, 30 something years. I'm still a bit shaky on the process. First time I did it, I read the recipe wrong because I've been watching my family do this cake for a long time. So I kind of was overconfident about it. So I read the recipe. It's like, oh, okay, 10 eggs. But then I didn't read the whole thing. It's, you're meant to have 8 eggs into the batter and then 2 eggs for the chocolate cream. I didn't do the right ratio, so I was left with a really runny batter that kind of looked a bit like curdly, so it wasn't very good. So I added more flour, but then it messed up the ratio between the butter and all that stuff. The layers became really dense and then kind of shrunk when they were baked, which shouldn't happen, so they're all the same size. So I kind of was left with a malformed cake that I had to like cut and trim myself. For my birthday, I did my cake. So I had the recipe, and I'm actually not allowed to share the recipe. So it's not like I could say to one of my friends, like, oh, do you want to do my cake? It's like, no, I can't. I'm bound legally.
How often do you speak to your mom and your grandmother about cooking?
Pretty much every time I talk to them, it's pretty much about cooking. So it's just nice because so I started engineering, right? So I'm pretty technical and I'm all about measurements and try to be as exact as I can. But my grandma, she basically just had high school, right? So she is not very good with numbers, but she has pinned down the quantity of everything that she uses. So she's more like tasting stuff. So I've learned from her, and every time we talk about a recipe, she's like, oh, I just put a pinch of this, a pinch of that. And I was like, no, but what? How much is a pinch? Is 2 grams? Is it 3 grams? Especially when you're baking, right? But then when I visited her last year, she saw me doing croissants, and she loved croissants. So we kind of exchanged a little bit of expertise in the bread making industry. So she just gave me a good tip. So every time we talk on the phone, it's basically about, oh, I try this, I try that, I tried this new recipe, or I saw what you did on Instagram, that looks amazing, can't wait to see you again so you can cook that. I come from a big family, so, and the kind of family with where everything revolves about food. So we kind of would gather doing a barbecue, you know, every Sunday or every weekend. We would have, for Christmas, we would do a thing called hallacas, which is mainly, I think, it really looks like a tamal, but it's much more elaborate, and it's a process that takes up to 2-3 days, and everyone in the family has a role. So someone has to like cut and chop all the ingredients, someone has to do the cooking, someone has to do the dough. So I think the importance of cooking in the family is just it's just essential, right? Because like, that's what we do.
Kat Galang produced that story. Allison Chan was the supervising producer. grandmothers can have a really wonderful influence on us. But to be honest, they don't all feed you food that you'd want to eat in a fancy restaurant. Or actually, any restaurant.
There's a show on Netflix that I like called Chef's Table. Each episode is about a talented chef from different parts of the world. A lot of them talk about memories of their grandmother's cooking and how their fancy restaurants pay homage to these childhood memories. Sabella, Sarah, Nikki, and Latifa wind back the clock on their grandmother's kitchen table.
She was like a very small woman. She would like curl her hair every night with like those big plastic pink curlers. She had 5 sons and she always wanted a daughter and she never got one.
She had curly hair and glasses. She was really a matter of fact, no nonsense, pretty blunt and direct.
Grandma would drop me off to school, pick me up at school, cook me food all the time after school, make me all the snacks and things. So yeah, she kind of did raise me in a way. I just remember always after school, we'd go home, watch like Judge Judy, Bold and the Beautiful, Huey's Kitchen.
Definitely a sense of aura around her, that she's very strong and so very opinionated. I guess she comes across as if she's yelling at you, but it might not be the case. It's just the way she expresses herself.
My grandmother, as I mentioned, is the mother of 5 boys. So you'd think that she'd be really good at like cooking heaps of food. Like all these boys played sport, like they'd run around, like also like Indian grandmother, like I'm expecting like hordes of curry and like all of this stuff. And I'm sure she did do that, but my grandmother never, like she did cook, but my grandfather cooked mainly in my family. And so my grandmother, when she did cook, it would take years.
Would she, for example, cook for you?
No. She was not much of a, I guess, I don't know if it sounds offensive, but a domesticated lady, like, yeah, she was more of a businesswoman.
At 10 months old, I was diagnosed with anaphylaxis. So I'm allergic to dairy, eggs, seafood, and tree nuts, which makes it kind of interesting to cater for a child when no one else in the family had ever had allergies before.
Your grandma would have had to accommodate for your particular food needs. Can you tell me about some of the things that she would feed you in particular then?
Yes. So for breakfast, she would make me rice bubbles with water and sugar because I couldn't have milk. The water does make the rice bubbles a lot soggier. So that's the texture we're talking about, although the sugary crunch makes it a lot more interesting. I'd say probably with the amount of sugar I was putting on it to make it palatable, it just tasted like sugar with a bit of like soggy undertone, if that's the way to describe it, yeah.
Are we talking like tap water, hot water?
We're talking tap water, yeah.
We had the egg noodles with frankfurts and tomato sauce. And it was just there, and like no one thought to question her. Packet egg noodles that she'd take out and boil for 2 minutes and then drain, and then you know, packet frankfurts from the fridge that she'd boil and put on the side in a big bowl. Definitely drawn to the frankfurts because my mum didn't make us frankfurts. She said we were allergic, which I didn't think we were.
Oh, in Vanuatu, there are, I guess, locally produced or grown avocados. But I just remember my grandma either putting soy sauce or sugar. So not sugar and soy sauce together, but either one. And I remember doing that and I thought that that was actually quite delicious just because, what, the only taste that you'll get is sweet. And likewise with the soy sauce, it was a similar case. Like if she felt like savory, she'd cut it. And then she would eat it. And really the only taste that you could taste was soy sauce.
And now we invite you to relax. Just pull up a chair as the dining room proudly presents your dinner.
I was 7 years old.
Guest.
And I think my family was out. And I was home alone with my grandma. And I was like watching TV or something. And I got really hungry. And I went up to her and I was like, oh, like, can I have chips or something? Like, I'm really hungry. And in my mind, I was like, this is great. She'll go around to the corner shops and she'll pick up some chips. She'll bring them home and I'll get to eat chips and it's the afternoon and everything's amazing. And my grandmother was like, yeah, sure, that's fine. And she just kind of turns around and walks into the kitchen. And I'm like, what the hell is she doing? This is not what I wanted. And she like pulls out a potato and starts peeling it and washing it. But that's fine. She'll make me hot chips.
No one's gloomy or complaining while the flatware is entertaining.
Yeah, about 4 hours later, she like, you know, fries them and then serves them to me like a small handful of chips. And I'm like, that's fine, you know, they'll just taste like chips. But it ends with her pulling out a coconut, which I'm not sure where she got it from, but she pulls out a coconut and like cracks it in half and then is like, no, you can't eat it yet. Like the chips aren't ready. So I'm sitting at the table watching her and she just like opens this coconut and like pulls out the flesh and then proceeds to grate the coconut onto the chips.
What do you remember about actually like putting this stuff in your mouth?
It needed more salt. It wasn't dry. Like that's why it was kind of awful, because it made the chips soggy.
When I first found out that people would actually put avocado in other things, like in sandwiches, but I found that quite weird.
Like now as an adult, would you be able to eat avocado in the same way that your grandma served you?
Definitely not sugar, but I think I could still eat it with soy sauce because it's not drenched in it. It's just like a little bit.
So you're now a parent to 2 children.
Yes.
Would you ever feed them the egg noodles and tomato sauce and Frankfurt's combination?
No.
I don't know what this meal is. And like when I told my family about it, I told my dad and I told all my uncles, they all just kind of stared at me and they were like, we've never been served this meal in our life.
That story was by Allison Chan. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Alina Godwin. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer. And I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com and subscribe to our podcast.